The prize pig, the Empress of Blandings, was still missing. Sunshine, calling to all right-thinking men to come out and revel in its heartening warmth, poured in at the windows of the great library of Blandings Castle. But to Clarence, 9th Earl of Emsworth, much as he liked sunshine as a rule, it brought no cheer. His face drawn, his pince-nez askew, his tie drooping away from its stud like a languorous lily, he sat staring sightlessly before him. He looked like something that had just been prepared for stuffing by a taxidermist. The door of the library opened, revealing the natty person of his brother Galahad. Lord Emsworth straightened his pince-nez and looked at him apprehensively. Knowing how little reverence there was in the Honourable Galahad's composition, and how tepid was his interest in the honourable struggles for supremacy of fat pigs, he feared that the other was about to wound him in his bereavement with some jarring flippancy. The Honourable Galahad sat down, hitched up the knees of his trousers, cleared his throat, and spoke in a tone that could not have been more sympathetic or in better taste.
Bad business, this, Clarence.
It's appalling, my dear fellow.
What are you going to do about it?
Lord Emsworth shrugged his shoulders hopelessly.
I'm at a loss. What young Carmody tells me has completely upset all my plans.
Carmody?
Well, I sent him to the Argus Inquiry Agency in London to engage the services of a detective. It is a firm that Sir Gregory Parslow once mentioned to me in the days when we were on better terms. Parslow, said the Hon. Galahad, and sniffed. So I sent young Carmody to London to approach them about finding the Empress. And now he tells me that his errand proved fruitless. They were firm in their refusal to trace missing pigs.
Just as well.
What do you mean?
Save a lot of unnecessary expense. There's no need for you to waste money employing detectives.
Well, I thought that possibly the trained mind...
I can tell you who's got the Empress. It's as plain as the nose on your face.
Lord Emsworth felt his nose.
Is it?
He said doubtfully.
I've just been talking to Constance.
Constance?
Lord Emsworth opened his mouth feebly.
She hasn't got my pig.
I have been talking to Constance, repeated the Honourable Galahad, and she called me some very unpleasant names.
Yeah, she does sometimes. Even as a child, I remember
a senile mischief-maker, among others, and a meddling old penguin. And all because I told her that the man who had stolen Empress of Blandings was young Gregory Parslow.
Parslow?
Parslow. Well, surely it's obvious.
I should have thought it would have been clear to the meanest intelligence. Parslow?
Look, don't keep saying Parslow.
But my dear Galahad,
it stands to reason.
You don't really think so?
Well, of course I do. Have you forgotten what I told you the other day?
Yes,
said Lord Emsworth. He always forgot what people told him the other day.
About young Parslow, said the Hon. Galahad, impatiently. About nobbling. Who else except young Parslow had any interest in getting the Empress out of the way? And if he hadn't known there was some dirty work planned, would that pigman of his, Brotherhood or whatever his name is, have been going about offering 3-1 on Pride of Matchingham? I told you at the time it was fishy.
The evidence was damning. And yet Lord Emsworth found himself once more a prey to doubt. Could the man actually be capable of the crime of the century? A fellow landowner? A justice of the peace? A man who grew pumpkins? A baronet?
But Galahad, have you a man in Parslow's position?
What do you mean, a man in his position? Do you suppose a fellow changes his nature just because a cousin of his dies and he comes into a baronetcy? Haven't I told you a dozen times that I've known young Parslow all his life? Known him intimately. He was always as hot as mustard and as wide as Leicester Square. Ask anyone who used to go around town in those days. When they saw young Parslow come in, strong men winced and hid their valuables.
Lord Emsworth uncoiled himself. His eyes glittered, and he breathed stertorously.
Oh, the scoundrel!
Tough nut, always was.
What shall I do?
Do? Why, go to him right away and tax him.
Tax him?
Yes. Look him squarely in the eye and tax him with his crime.
I will immediately.
I'll come with you.
Look him squarely in the eye.
And tax him.
And tax him.
In his study at Matchingham Hall, in the neighbouring village of Much Matchingham, Sir Gregory Parslow sat gazing at the current number of a weekly paper. What had attracted Sir Gregory's attention was the following. The Honourable Galahad Fleetwood, brother of the Earl of Emsworth. A little bird tells us that Galley is at Blandings Castle, Shropshire, the ancestral seat of the family, busily engaged in writing his reminiscences. As every member of the old brigade will testify, they ought to be as warm as the weather, if not warmer. Sir Gregory Parslow shivered, like one who, on the country ramble, suddenly perceives a snake in his path. The years had turned Sir Gregory into a man of portly habit, and as portly men do in moments of stress, he puffed. But puff he never so shrewdly, he could not blow away that paragraph. It was still there, looking up at him, when the door opened and the butler announced Lord Emsworth and Mr. Galahad Threepwood.
"Young Parslow,"
said the Hon. Galahad, speaking in a sharp, unpleasant voice,
"your sins have found you out. What the devil do you mean?" "See his face?"
asked the Hon. Galahad in a rasping aside.
"Yes, I'm looking at it now,"
said Lord Emsworth.
"Guilt written upon it."
"Plainly,"
agreed Lord Emsworth. The Honourable Galahad, who had folded his arms in a menacing manner, unfolded them and struck the desk a smart blow.
"Be careful, Parslow. Think before you speak. And when you speak, speak the truth. I may say, by way of a start, that we know all."
"Oh, Emsworth, explain. What the deuce are you doing here? And what the devil is that old image talking about?"
Lord Emsworth had been watching his brother with growing admiration. The latter's spirited opening of the case for the prosecution had won his hearty approval.
"Parslow, produce that pig."
Sir Gregory pushed his eyes back into their sockets a split second before they would have bulged out of his head beyond recovery.
"Did you say pig?"
"Pig. What pig?"
"He says what pig?"
"Yes, I heard him."
Sir Gregory Parslow again had trouble with his eyes.
"I don't know what you are talking about."
The Honourable Galahad unfolded his arms again and smote the desk a blow that unshipped the cover of the inkpot.
"Parslow, you sheep-faced, shambling exile from hell," he cried. "Disgorge that pig immediately."
"My Empress,"
added Lord Emsworth.
"Precisely. Empress of Blandings, the pig you stole last night."
Sir Gregory Parslow rose slowly from his chair.
"Do you mean to tell me that you seriously accuse Parslow? Sit down."
Sir Gregory choked.
I always knew, Emsworth, that you were as mad as a coot."
"As a what?"
whispered his lordship.
"Coot,"
said the Hon. Galahad curtly. "Sort of duck." He turned to the defendant again.
"Vituperation will do you no good, young Parslow. We know that you have stolen that pig."
"I haven't stolen any damn pig. What would I want to steal a pig for?"
The Honourable Galahad snorted.
"Parslow, will you or will you not cough up that pig?"
"I haven't got a pig."
"That is your last word, is it?"
"I haven't seen the creature."
"Why a coot?"
asked Lord Emsworth, who had been brooding for some time in silence.
"Very well,"
said the Honourable Galahad. "If that is the attitude you propose to adopt, there is no course before me but to take steps. And I'll tell you the steps I'm going to take, young Parslow. Often and often, when I've been sitting at my desk, I've remembered a good story that simply cried out to be put into my reminiscences. And every time I've said to myself, 'No,' I've said, 'that would wound young Parslow.' Good as it is, I can't use it. I must respect young Parslow's feelings. Well, from now on, there will be no more forbearance. The world shall know you for what you are, the only man who has ever thrown out of the Café de l'Europe for trying to raise the price of a bottle of champagne by raffling his trousers at the main bar. And what's more, I'll tell the full story of the prawns.'" A sharp cry escaped Sir Gregory. His face turned a deep magenta.
"And if Empress of Blandings is not back in her sty this afternoon, you will find it in my book."
"But I keep telling you,"
cried the suffering baronet, "that I know nothing whatever about your pig. Ha!
I've not seen the animal since last year's agricultural show."
"Oh,
I didn't know it had disappeared until you told me."
The Honourable Galahad stared fixedly at him through the black-rimmed monocle.
"Come, Clarence," he said.
Are we going?"
"Yes," said the Honourable Galahad with quiet dignity. "There is nothing more that we can do here. Let us get away from the house before it is struck by a thunderbolt."
That very afternoon, Sir Gregory Parslow sought the offices of the Argus Inquiry Agency. Percy Pilbeam listened attentively to the stout baronet's tale of woe. "He is determined to publish his book, Sir Gregory?"
"It's the only object he's got in life, a miserable old fossil."
"And he's resolved to include the stories?"
"He called on me this morning, expressly to tell me so. And I caught the next train to London to put the matter into your hands."
Pilbeam scratched his left cheekbone. "He said. Well, in the circumstances, I really don't see what is to be done, except,
get hold of the manuscript and destroy it, you were about to say.
Exactly. That's precisely what I've come to ask you to do for me. Philbin opened his mouth, startled. He'd not been about to say anything of the kind. He gazed blankly at the lawless Bart.
Steal the manuscript? Only possible way.
Well, it's rather a tall order, isn't it, Sir Gregory?
Not, replied the baronet ingratiatingly, for a clever young fellow like you.
The flattery left Philbin cold. His distant, unenthusiastic manner underwent no change. How could I get into the place?
Why, couldn't you go there as a butler or something?
Percy Philbin's only reply to this was a tolerant smile. He raised a pen to scratch his head with it.
Scarcely feasible, he said.
And again that rather pitying smile flitted across his face. The sight of it brought Sir Gregory to the boil. He felt an irresistible desire to say something to wipe it away.
Well, have it your own way, he snapped. But it may interest you to know that to get that manuscript into my possession, I am willing to pay £1,000.
It did, as he had foreseen, interest Pilbeam extremely. So much so that in his emotion he jerked the pen wildly, inflicting a nasty scalp wound.
A thuff? He stammered.
Sir Gregory perceived that he had allowed his sense of the dramatic to carry him away.
£500, he said rather quickly. A check for £500 the moment the old weasel's manuscript is in my hands.
Nature had so arranged it that in no circumstances could Percy Pilbeam's face ever become really beautiful. But at this moment there stole into it an expression which did something to relieve, to a certain extent, its normal unpleasantness. Get into Blanding's castle. Well, of course he could get into Blanding's castle. Until now he'd forgotten the outrageous suggestion of that young idiot whose name escaped him that he should come to Blanding's and hunt the lost pigs. Now it all came back to him. And Hugo's parting words, he recalled, had been that if ever he changed his mind, the commission would still be open.
I will take the case, Sir Gregory, he said. Huh! You may rely on my being at Blanding's castle by tomorrow evening at the latest.
Sir Gregory, he said, the great thing in matters like this is to be prepared with a plan. I have a plan.
Huh, said Sir Gregory.
When you arrive home, I want you to invite Mr. Galahad Threepwood to dinner tomorrow night. The baronet shook like a jelly. Wrath and amazement fought within him. Ask the man to dinner after what had occurred. As many other of the Blanding's castle party as you think fit, of course, but Mr. Threepwood without fail. Once he is out of the house, my path will be clear. Wrath and amazement died away. The baronet had grasped the idea. The beauty and simplicity of the stratagem stirred his admiration.
Mr. Pilbeam, he said with deep feeling, coming to see you was the wisest thing I ever did in my life.
Quite, said Percy Pilbeam.